The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for March 8th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Jim Pro of the Andersons in Dunkirk, Indiana. In agricultural news, South Korea made what U.S. officials say was a minor concession to break the impasse on U.S. beef trade today. Also, congressional lawmakers are saying an ethanol partnership with Brazil runs counter to Bush administration proposals to become more energy independent. I'll have these and other stories this half hour. And meteorologist Peter Levitt will be by with agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat, 504 and a half, down 1 1/2. May, 502 and a quarter, down a quarter. At the Board of Trade, March wheat, 464, down 2 1/2. May, 475 and a half, down 2 1/2. July, 487 and 3/4, down 1 3/4. March corn, 412, down 3 3/4. May, 421 and a half, down 3. July, 430 and 3/4, down 2. December, 410 and 3/4, up 1 1/2. March beans, 745, up 2 1/4. May, 759, up 1 3/4. July, 774 and a half, up 1 3/4. November, 797 and a half, up 2 1/4. March soybean meal, 215.80, down 170. March soybean oil, 3018, up 33. At the Merck, March feeders, 104.85, up 147 and a half. April live cattle, 101.02. 2 1/2, up 247 1/2, and April lean hogs, 67.75, up 207 1/2. Joining us on the phone to talk about the markets is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
What got into the Merck today to give it such a big giddy up?
Well, the cash fundamentals are very strong. We saw a big jump up in box beef or wholesale beef prices here today, I think up over $404 or something like that. So feedlots are current, weights are current, feedlots are asking higher money, and there's good profit margins in the kill side. So that's all brought into the futures market with the big surge higher. You also have kind of the same thing going on in the pork complex. You've got declining weights. You've got firming red meat prices, and that just kind of follow through with a lot of technical fund buying. Now, these are all generally favorable because it tells you that the livestock industry is fairly orderly. Supplies are under control. But the higher prices now will maybe encourage expansion in livestock now that some of these higher prices, that the higher input costs can now be passed on to the consumer. So that should be generally supportive to the underlying feed demand base longer term.
Let's turn your attention then to the Chicago Board of Trade, where it was a very choppy and mixed day with the nearbys and the corn pit showing losses while the deferreds were on the positive side of things today. What does your technical outlook look like after today's little bit of information?
Well, you have to be disappointed with the corn action. The Monday's price reversal up has really never been able to really be solidified. We kind of need to go above Monday's high, I think, to solidify that reversal up as something a little more important than just maybe a short covering bounce off of an oversold technical condition. Kind of thought we might get that job done with a higher open this morning or higher early trade. We had a good weekly export sales number, the best we've had for some time. But at the end of the day, it was pretty much all long liquidation activity. I think some people are bracing for maybe some negative numbers in tomorrow's supply-demand tables. But I think a lot of it, what we're seeing here in the corn market is worries about profit margins in the ethanol industry. We had crude oil prices higher earlier. Some kind of felt that kind of supported corn. But when the crude oil prices started softening and coming off their highs, I think that kind of triggered some of it in corn. So I think there's some worry about profitability of these ethanol plants. I think there's concern about corn planting. We do have the corn planters rolling in the south, and if the 6 to 10 day weather forecasts that are indicating a warmer, drier weather pattern on the way does indicate that we're going to begin to see more planting activity kind of take hold here over the next couple of weeks. So when you talk about planting 90 million acres of corn and you get in spring, looks like it might be breaking early. That's just going to weigh on the market. Now, we could come in here Monday morning and everything be changed and the weather outlook be wet. So, but I think both corn and soybeans are kind of in a holding pattern, waiting to see, you know, how this spring weather pattern is going to unfold. If it's wet, delayed, corn futures are going to rally to the upside and soybean futures are going to break to the downside. You're going to see them go in opposite directions. If you have an early planting, corn planters are starting to roll. I think soybeans are going to take off and rally while the corn planters are rolling to try to encourage the corn planters to stop and plant some beans and not plant the whole corn belt to corn. So I think we're kind of in a holding pattern waiting to see how the spring weather pattern develops, and I think the market will act accordingly.
You talked about ethanol a little earlier as a force that needs to be looked at and reckoned with. And I'm wondering, as an analyst, Dan, what kind of things are you looking at? Are you looking at rack prices, the ethanol futures, which doesn't have heavy volume, but it is a contract that's being traded by the industry? What kind of things are you kind of keeping an eye on to give clues to what corn's direction might be?
Well, you pretty much got to look, I think, at raw crude oil prices. Everything has kind of pivoted off of crude oil prices and whether or not these crude oil prices can seasonally climb as we go on into the May timeframe. I mean, seasonally, crude oil prices, gasoline prices strengthen as you go into the first day of summer, basically, or first part of June, when the kids all get out of school and vacations begin to kind of take hold. So far, the crude oil market, we've had a recovery off our low here of a month or month and a half ago, but we really are kind of wanting to stall out here. So I think that's the thing you have to, because everything is pretty well dependent upon what crude oil prices do. I do believe, though, I've understood that there, you know, the drop in crude oil prices and the rally in corn prices has definitely, you know, slowed some plans. There's a lot of plans on hold, whether or not when to you know, to move forward with building, to breaking new soils, to build new plants. But the market feels as though it's got enough ethanol for right now, anyway. And we need to have something come along and, you know, rejuvenate that demand side of that equation.
What advice do you have for producers? Or is this a place to do some selling if you haven't done any yet?
Well, again, it depends upon where you're at. I mean, I think the market, a lot of my cyclical time counts tells me that the market is at a point in here where things can begin to catch and we could maybe begin to strengthen maybe as we go into that March report or first part of April, depending upon how planting or the spring weather pattern kind of shapes up. But I think we're at the point where corn and soybeans might want to divorce themselves and play the weather market, depending upon what kind of spring weather pattern we have.
Thank you much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. He is located in Bloomington, Illinois. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's two-state forecast tonight, he says in northwestern Illinois, increasing cloudiness, elsewhere mostly clear, lows ranging from around 20 in northeastern Indiana to 36 in southwestern Illinois. And then tomorrow, in northern and west central Illinois, mostly cloudy with showers arriving in east central and southern Illinois and in northwestern Indiana, increasing cloudiness. In eastern and southern Indiana, mostly sunny with highs ranging from 45 degrees in the far north to 67 degrees in the far south. In agricultural news, South Korea today says it will ease its quarantine standards over banned bone fragments in American beef, paving the way for resumption of U.S. imports. South Korea will maintain its zero-tolerance stance on bone fragments, but says it now will return only individual boxes of meat that contain bone fragments instead of rejecting the entire shipment. But Bush administration officials are not satisfied. Assistant U.S. Trade Representative Wendy Cutler says South Korea's zero-tolerance stance on bone chips is not based in science and must end. A group of Senate Democrats are vowing to let presidential promotional trade authorities sunset at the end of June unless they receive stronger labor and environmental standards, as well as a greater role for Congress in defining free trade deals. The group, led by Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio and Byron Dorgan of North Dakota, say the Bush administration must come up with concessions before they will vote to extend TPA. Meanwhile, the AFL-CIO is calling on Congress to kill fast-track trade negotiating authority and replace it with a new process that, in the words of AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Richard Trumka, puts Congress back in the game. U.S. buyers have returned in force to Brazil's ethanol market this week due to a surge in U.S. ethanol prices. U.S. ethanol prices in the past week jumped to as high as $2.40 a gallon, up 20 to 30 cents from a few weeks ago. But Brazilian ethanol stocks are expected to stay tight until at least May, when new crop corn ethanol hits the market. Meanwhile, two U.S. senators say an ethanol partnership with Brazil could run counter to Bush administration desires to be less dependent on foreign energy. Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley.
God only made so much oil. If you got somebody promoting getting energy someplace else, and it's clean and it creates jobs and it doesn't put us at the behest of OPEC, you know, we ought to welcome that. But we want to welcome it from a standpoint that the United States taxpayers are not subsidizing competition.
And South Dakota Republican John Thune says the whole purpose of developing U.S. ethanol was to become more energy independent.
Urging foreign countries to ramp up their production certainly doesn't address the current energy dilemma that the president has said we need to fix here in the United States, and we shouldn't put other countries' ethanol production before our own. Especially when investors are willing to expand production here in this country. Using American tax dollars to replace one source of foreign energy with another is not good policy, and it's not in America's best interest.
Brazil is calling for an end to a 54-cent a gallon tariff on U.S. ethanol imports. Thune says the tariff needs to continue.
Because we are trying to develop a domestic industry here in this country that is robust and that will not only meet the demands of the future, lessen our dependence upon foreign sources of energy, and clean up the air, this is something that's very good for American agricultural producers. And so it doesn't make sense in my mind at this point for us to be trying to develop that industry elsewhere around the world, nor to make us dependent upon a foreign source of energy when the whole purpose of this undertaking is to become less dependent upon foreign sources of energy. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Meanwhile, the American Corn Growers Association is taking issue with remarks made by the National Pork Producers Council over ethanol. Earlier this week, the NPPC called for an end to the 54 cent a gallon tariff on imported ethanol and 51 cent a gallon ethanol blender's tax credit. ACGA President Keith Bowen says, and this is a quote, "I personally doubt that any family hog farmers would ever ask to remove the renewable energy initiatives." Witnesses told U.S. lawmakers yesterday that it will cost more to design and build cellulosic ethanol plants compared with corn ethanol plants. Speaking at a House Agriculture Subcommittee hearing yesterday, Larry Ward, Vice President for Development for Bowen, predicted that in 2009, the cost of designing and building a cellulosic ethanol plant would be $4 per gallon of capacity, while corn-to-ethanol plants have been built at prices between $1.15 and $2.25 per gallon of capacity. Ward also testified that the limits on two USDA loan programs are too low to stimulate cellulosic development. The chairman of the National Cotton Council is strongly signaling opposition to USDA's Farm Bill proposal, Stuart Doan reports.
According to John Pashu, the Bush administration's Farm Bill proposal doesn't meet the NCC's definition of a predictable farm policy.
The secretary stresses the need for new farm policy to be WTO compliant. What international agreement would Secretary Johans have us meet? Writing a weak farm bill today that attempts to meet unknown future disciplines that might arise from negotiations that are currently showing little movement does not sound like a sound strategy.
And while wishing for a positive outcome in the World Trade Talks, Pashu said the Council has made it clear
its support for the ambitious U.S. proposal on the reduction of domestic support commensurate with increases in market access. This means credible, clear-cut results in China.
Pashu said the direction of the Doha round, and specifically the degree to which cotton is singled out for faster and deeper subsidy cuts, will determine whether NCC backs an extension of trade promotion authority. Stuart Doan, Memphis.
A grain truckers' strike in Argentina is in its fourth day with no sign of resolution. Wednesday, just 58 trucks arrived at the principal export ports in Santa Fe province. Roadblocks set up by protesting truckers are also preventing transportation of milk and cattle. The strike is in protest over frozen shipping rates and new government requirements to update trucker fleets. The Congressional Budget Office says the Bush administration Farm Bill proposal falls short of the savings announced by USDA Secretary Mike Johans. In unveiling USDA's Farm Bill plan, Johans said it would save $4.49 billion in commodity farm program spending over 10 years. The CBO says that's not the case, but rather commodity farm program spending under the USDA plan falls in line with the amount budgeted by the CBO baseline, roughly $74.5 billion over 10 years. USDA also projected total spending growth of all its ag programs at just under $5 billion over the next decade. CBO says increased spending will be closer to $9.9 billion. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
We took a chance.
No, we bet on a sure thing, and we can do it again.
So let's ask them.
Okay. Listeners, we want to keep Pledge Drive short, but to bring you more programming and efficient fundraising, we need your help. Please contribute early online at willpledge.org. Help make our second Power Hour a success by contributing to the Member Match Fund. Thank you.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is a name, if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you might be familiar with. He's Jim Proe of the Andersons, but not out of Champaign no more, but rather over in Dunkirk, Indiana. Good afternoon, Jim.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Thanks very much for filling in for us today. I wonder, in your neck of the woods, whether producers are doing much business?
The farmers are looking for opportunities to sell, but haven't found quite as many in the last couple of days since we had that break. Did have a fair amount of movement on Monday and just some lighter selling the last 2 days, including today.
Are there thoughts from producers that they might see $4 cash corn by July?
Well, and you know, we've already, you could sell some $4 cash corn easily by July. I think the real question is the next go-around, could they sell $4.25 mm-hmm. to $4.50 cash? I think that's what a lot of them are waiting on at this point, if they are waiting for an opportunity.
And what about your thoughts post the planting intentions report? Let's say for a moment that there is a bullish surprise in the report. What do you think basis will do in the 30 days following?
Well, I think if the USDA supports a lower planted corn acre, which is really what would be bullish, I would guess that about the time that the U.S. farmer wants to go to the field, they will see a basis improvement that could be worth 10 to 15 cents. Of course, they'll be busy doing other things, so they probably will be filled in by the commercials. Lots of elevators are still holding grain in temporary storage, whether that be covered piles or mostly covered piles at this point. And that would certainly try to fill that pipe if that basis improvement happened when you're describing it.
How much new cash business have you done?
Recent cash, new cash business, not a tremendous amount. Most people have had an opportunity to sell in this $3.85 to $4 cash fall delivered corn market. So those that have wanted to sell in this value have done so. Those that haven't sold here because they were waiting for something else are still waiting. And obviously those that sold a lot lower values are waiting to try to average up at something higher. So we've had a little bit of everything, but I think today we're either going to have to go a lot higher or a lot lower to find that next big round of movement.
Give us your predictions for tomorrow morning's WASDE report.
Well, they have not made any adjustment on total corn use this year, and I believe with the ethanol plants that have been delayed, mostly due to weather and a few other construction issues, that we probably won't grind quite as much corn as the USDA had anticipated in this crop year. And at some point, we're going to have to make that adjustment. Now, whether they make that tomorrow in that report, it'll be interesting to see. But as you take a look at just a 60-day delay at an ethanol plant, you would use 6 million bushels less corn in a given year. Well, you do multiply that out by 10 to 30 plants, all of a sudden you've made a real change in the final carryout number. So that doesn't mean those plants aren't coming online and they won't grind corn, but they can never catch up. They can't turn the clock back and grind that corn. So that'll be something to be interesting to see if that happens.
Your prices today?
Here in East Central Indiana, you're taking a look at our cash value at $3.97. Fall delivered $3.85, soybeans in East Central Indiana at $7.25, and fall at $7.69, and our wheat bid for June, July is $4.42.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
Jim Proe of the Andersons, he is out of Dunkirk, Indiana.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Business groups in Illinois are mounting a full-scale counteroffensive to a proposal to enact a new gross receipts tax. Governor Rob Blagojevich says corporations should pay more to help finance improvements in health care and education. But members of the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce say the tax on businesses would eventually get passed on to consumers, forcing retailers to boost prices even if they themselves don't pay any additional taxes. The Illinois Auditor General is asking the University of Illinois to account for work that its employees have performed for university-affiliated companies. It includes nearly $190,000 in legal, clerical, and other services that the U of I provided to Illinois Ventures, the U of I Research Park, and Prairie Land Energy. Prairie Land buys and produces energy for the university. The other two agencies help foster new entrepreneurs. An annual report says the U of I needs to account for those services, something that Vice President Doug Beckman says the university will do from now on. Four 19-year-olds are accused of making fake $20 bills on a copier and a printer at a residence hall at Eastern Illinois University. An indictment returned by a federal grand jury in Springfield accuses the four of spending more than $1,000 in counterfeit money in a four-day period last year, mostly at fast food restaurants. CBS is bringing new direction to its struggling evening news broadcasts with Katie Couric. It's turning to a University of Illinois graduate. The network has fired the executive producer of the CBS Evening News and is replacing him with former CNN and MSNBC president Rick Kaplan. This Sunday's service at the First Baptist Church in Francisville, Indiana, will start at the usual time, but it will be 2 hours early. Confusion over time is nothing new in Pulaski County, Indiana, but residents hope it'll end Sunday when daylight saving time takes effect. The county has received permission from the federal government to move from central time to eastern time. The change means that when clocks spring forward an hour on Sunday, Pulaski County's courthouse clock will actually be moved ahead 2 hours. The county was put on central time after state lawmakers approved statewide daylight time 2 years ago. After months of confusion, county officials requested a switch back to eastern. Many residents already observe eastern time to stay in sync with neighbors to the east. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is Peter Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I want to start right in the Midwest, right here in the Corn Belt, and ask you whether or not you believe by the end of the month the bias that we have had toward wetness next week, notwithstanding, will be with us.
Yeah, it still will be. Next week's sort of an exception for what we've, this coming week, temperatures will actually be rather warm next week. But then we have another series of systems due to descend from Canada into the Midwest with active fronts working on them. And I think we'll see some more wet weather the week after this next one. So we're really not out of that pattern yet.
What are you looking for that would break that pattern? What clues would tell you that we're moving to a drier bias?
Well, there's the seasonal ones, but there's also La Nina. We talked about that earlier, that we thought we'd go through a period of La Nada when it was neither La Nina or El Nino. But it looks like we're racing from El Nino right into a La Nina. So a La Nina pattern looks as though it's coming on for April, May, June, and the first part of summer, and that's the normal time for La Niñas to show up. Now, the effect of those is not very strong in the summer months in the Midwest, but there is a tendency for the weather to be somewhat drier than normal during La Niña periods in the western Corn Belt early on, and then the dryness shifts eastward in the latter half of the summer. La Niña's also call for more frequent hurricane activity, so we'll probably see a return to a normal number of hurricanes after last year's below normal number. And it also says some pretty decent rain in the Canadian prairies and the western parts of the northern plains. So that's an area that can use the rain because we've got drought in the northern plains and some incipient drought in the upper Midwest.
Let's turn your attention to South America, Argentina. Looks like they've been receiving some heavy rain in northern crop areas lately.
Yes, they have. As a matter of fact, in both areas, both northern and southern, they've had some pretty good rains, and it's extended up into southern Brazil. And that's mostly favorable all around because Argentina has had a struggle for the last year or two on getting sufficient moisture, and this is still timely for the Argentine, and it's beneficial in southern Brazil for their second corn crop. They plant a second corn crop this time of year, and that probably will favor the initial development of that. And also drier in west central Brazil, which is the soybean area, and this is the west central portion of southern Brazil. And they've been too wet most of the season, so dryness is beneficial up there. So I'd say all around the weather looks pretty good for the South American producing areas.
And then one final question before I let you go. Was there a change in the track in Tropical Cyclone George?
I have no information. I have not been looking at George, so I will pass on that one.
Thanks much, Peter.
Oh, okay, David. Right.
Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levin, and that is today's closing market report. Don't forget to tune in on Saturday morning. I'll make that tomorrow morning, rather, at 8:49 for our first look at agricultural weather. And remember, you can take a look at today's futures analysis, cash grain report, and weather on our web at WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.